Well, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we visit with the director of the Army National Guard for the nation and check in with the Vietnam veteran about his tour of duty. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, approximately 24 people per minute are victims of rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner in the United States. That's more than 12 million women and men over the course of a year. Since 1981, October has been recognized as National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Domestic violence is a pattern of behavior used by one partner to maintain power and control over another partner in an intimate relationship. Anyone of any race, age, sexual orientation, religion, gender, or socioeconomic background can be a victim or perpetrator. Domestic violence varies from relationship to relationship and can happen in any form of physical, emotional, sexual, reproductive, financial, or digital abuse. If you or a loved one are experiencing any form of abuse, the National Domestic Violence Hotline will help victims find a path to safety. Visit www.thehotline.org or call 1-800-799-7233.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
Joining me now is Lieutenant General John Jensen, who is the Director of the Army National Guard, and we're speaking to him from the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. General Jensen, good to see you again. Thanks for having us over to the Pentagon.
Tom, it's a pleasure to see you and the team again. Welcome to the Pentagon. As I said, make sure you keep one hand on your wallet here, you know, as you walk the hallways, all right?
Sir, yes, sir. We'll do that.
Yeah, they're very quick to figure out who the tourists are, so you got to be careful here.
Well, we've got good escorts, and your people are taking good care of us, sir.
Yeah.
Sir, we wanted to do a little special today. You and I have known each other for years, and it goes back to when you were Adjutant General and before that Division Commander and so forth, but I want to go back to when you enlisted, and as I recall, you were a combat medic when this all started.
I was a freshman at college at Northwest Missouri State University, like a lot of college students, you know, trying to figure out how to pay for college, and so I enlisted into the Army National Guard of Iowa, 1st Battalion, 168th Infantry, as a combat medic in November of 1982, so 38 years ago, soon to be 39 years ago, I started off on this journey, and like a lot of soldiers when you enlist, it's 6 years and I'm getting out, you know, and here I am 30-some years later still serving, proudly.
Did you ever imagine you might be a three-star general and director of the Army National Guard in the Pentagon, sir?
No. Even just a couple years ago, I would have told you I would not have been able to imagine that. And so, you know, I've had a very fortunate career, obviously, and I've been blessed with great mentors, great soldiers, great leaders. And, you know, obviously I know luck plays a part of that as well. And so I've just had a very blessed career.
And, sir, you were commissioned as a second lieutenant in August of 1989.
I was. And so I was a staff sergeant serving inside of that medical platoon in the 168 Infantry. I kind of got recruited against my wishes to go to OCS, and I started my officer career in August of 1989 as a second lieutenant commissioned in the infantry. Again, something I never really planned on doing or something I really aspired to do. It just an opportunity opened, and a couple of people that I had a tremendous amount of respect for gave me a lot of encouragement and maybe even a little bit of a kick in the behind to go take on this new challenge. And so I did that, and obviously that opened up all kinds of different career opportunities for me that I just could never have imagined when I was a young private E1 in November of 82.
In general, on your journey to becoming a lieutenant general, you had several operational assignments, and there was one in January 2001 to June of 2001 in Kuwait.
Yeah, as a member, I was a major at the time, and as a member of the 168, we picked up a mobilization to Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. And so part of the element, the Iowa element from the 168 went to Kuwait. And then there was also an element from 2nd Battalion, 135th Infantry from Minnesota that did the Saudi Arabia element of that mission. And it'd be interesting because a few years later, our paths would cross again with the 135 and myself. And so what we did during that time period, you know, this was pre-9/11. the United States and our allies were still enforcing the southern no-fly zone and the northern no-fly zone. So, you know, obviously being in Kuwait, we were part of that element that was enforcing the no-fly zone in the south. And so what the soldiers of the 168 and the 135 did was we secured Patriot battery sites. We secured key communication sites, and then we provided quick reaction force and a couple other capabilities to that element.
And, sir, after that assignment, somehow you got to the Minnesota National Guard.
I did. Right after that deployment, I left Kuwait beginning of June of 2001, reported right back to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, where I attended the School of Advanced Military Studies. And ultimately, after graduating that, one of the requirements of that course was you had to be assigned into an Army division. And so, you know, being from Iowa, our division was up in Minnesota, the 34th Infantry Division. So my family and I relocated to Apple Valley, and we began serving inside the 34th Infantry Division there at that time in Rosemont, now since moved.
And then immediately after that, you deployed again.
We did. I had the great opportunity to deploy to Bosnia-Herzegovina as part of the stabilization force with just an incredibly talented team. General Nash was, at that time, the brigadier general that commanded that task force. But a group of men and women who, you know, became lifelong friends and a group of men and women that we would have other challenges together as well. And so it was a great rehearsal to the hard things that the Minnesota Army National Guard was going to be asked to do very shortly after that as it related to operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. So as much as any deployment could be a joy, that one was a great deployment.
We're speaking with Lieutenant General John Jensen from the Pentagon on Minnesota Military Radio. And then, sir, in 2007, there was another deployment with the 34th Brigade Combat Team.
Yeah, so 1st Brigade mobilized in September of 2005, deployed into Iraq March of 2006. And ultimately, that element was deployed for 22 months. And so inside the organization, you know, everybody calls that the long deployment. And you don't need to explain why it's called the long deployment, but 22 months there. I was very fortunate towards the end of their deployment. At that time, Colonel Dave Belisario, who would later become Major General Dave Belisario, the division commander, asked for me to come over and do some things for the brigade. So I was able to spend, I think, 4 or 5 months with that 1st Brigade. And again, just an incredibly talented organization that was given a very difficult mission to accomplish and a 22-month deployment, and they just did it remarkably well.
And, sir, the pace of things back in those days was pretty fast because in 2008 you deployed again with the division.
I did. So I again, under General Nash, had the opportunity to deploy as the Division G3. We had everything in southern Iraq, so from basically south of Baghdad all the way down to the Kuwaiti border. We were headquartered in Basra. And, you know, ultimately that was my last deployment. But, again, just a great team of professional officers and soldiers on that team. And, you know, I mentioned Dave Elisario, but Jerry Lang was the other DCG, and Neil Lloyd was our chief of staff, and just a great team. And, you know, I look back on that experience, and it seems so long ago, you know. When you look back now, that's already over 11 years since we returned. And so very proud of that. And what's amazing about that deployment is I continue to run into people across the Army that we worked with during that. As a matter of fact, I just got back from the National Training Center, and the commanding general of the National Training Center had worked as the operations officer of one of the brigades that were subordinate to us in southern Iraq. So still have connections all these years later.
In general, after that, you kept working your way up, become 34th Red Bull Infantry Division commander, and eventually Minnesota's adjutant general.
Yeah, I had the fortune of following Neil Lloyd as the division commander of 34th. He had put together just a great team, and so it was a great command climate to come into, and very for a very short period of time, have the privilege to command the division. And then when General Nash, Rick Nash, retired as the TAG, Governor Dayton appointed me as the Adjutant General. And again, that was a great experience because I had been, you know, part of a very close part of General Nash's time as the Adjutant General. For most of his time as the Adjutant General, I served as his Chief of Staff. So, you know, obviously the processes, the practices, and the people were all incredibly familiar with me. And it was a great team. And I look back at that time very fondly. And there's more than one morning I wake up asking myself, why did I leave that team? Why did I come out here? And so I've got just the deepest respect and pride to have been having led that team for a while.
And General, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about your next assignment. After you were Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, you became Director of the Army National Guard and moved to Washington, D.C. We're speaking with Lieutenant General John Jensen. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been interviewing today Lieutenant General John Jensen, who is the director of the Army National Guard from the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. And, General, it's always great to see you and some nice digs here in the Pentagon. And we were talking when we ended that last segment about you being the Adjutant General of the state of Minnesota. You and I have talked many times over the years about the National Guard has a federal and state mission. And during your time as Adjutant General, before you moved out here, I think there's been no busier time that I can recall, because you had plenty of federal deployments going on. The pandemic hit, the coronavirus pandemic hit. There was some civil disturbance. It was busy, and you must have put all of those troops through the ringer for the time that you were tagged. It was a busy time.
No, it was, Tom. But, you know, really what helped us accomplish those missions in Minnesota is really kind of the experience that I talked about, the deployments I was able to serve on. You know, obviously I wasn't the only, you know, only person in Minnesota who was deploying that time. You know, we had any number of units, both in the Army and the Air Guard, deployed, contributing to our national security during that time. And so when our state needed us to do very complex things, our guardsmen were prepared because of those deployments and those opportunities and those experiences that we received during that time. And so whether it was responding to COVID or responding to civil unrest, I felt very confident that we had the right people and that we could accomplish the mission that the governor gave us. And so I'm just incredibly proud of that time, as the Adjutant General. And I know Sean Mankey and the team just continues to perform at a very high level in Minnesota. And so we're very fortunate to have the National Guard that we do in Minnesota. Incredibly professional team that could very flexible, very versatile, can accomplish an array of missions.
And, sir, that year or the last year you were there, the local mission for the state of Minnesota was huge. You helped out with the pandemic. You had to train your soldiers virtually and your airmen. You had to step up and help with shots and all kinds of things. And then we had some civil problems that the governor called you up for. And I think it was the first time in the history of Minnesota that you had to call up every available airman and soldier.
Yeah, so when the governor said, you know, we're mobilizing the entire Minnesota National Guard, I had to go in and negotiate that number a little bit with him to make sure that we set the right expectation. But ultimately, over 7,100 soldiers and airmen responded to that mission. I'm incredibly proud of how we responded to that and the support that we gave to the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and other cities. I think the story that maybe we don't focus enough on was immediately after that, we had 1st Brigade, 34th Infantry Division, who was scheduled for a National Training Center rotation. The first Army rotation during the COVID environment. And to this day, the Chief of Staff of the Army, General McConville, still talks about that rotation because he went out and he visited that brigade. And he still talks about that, and he talks about how proud he was. And as a guardsman for the Army Guard to lead the Army back into that complex collective training environment, I think speaks very highly of the professionalism of the Army National Guard and the professionalism of that 1st Brigade, 34th Infantry Division, and their leadership.
In general, about that time, you had the opportunity to come to Washington, D.C. to become the director of the Army National Guard. Got promoted, got another star, Lieutenant General John Jensen, Director, Army National Guard. He guides the formulation, development, and implementation of all programs and policies affecting the Army National Guard, a force of nearly 335,000 soldiers in the 50 states, three territories, and the District of Columbia. Sir, that just sounds like an impossibly big job.
It can get a little overwhelming if you try to do everything. But the good thing is I don't try to do everything. I just try to do those things that I think that are the tasks of the director. But really, I think though, if you know somebody had asked me, you know, what is it that I really do? What I try to do is I try to resource and enable the adjutants general across our 50 states, three territories, and the District of Columbia to meet the mission that the United States Army has given them, or that their governor has given them. And so that's how I really look at it. I'm not a commander. I don't command the Army Guard. I don't command adjutants general. I'm the director. And so I work directly for the chief of the National Guard Bureau, and I obviously support the chief of staff of the Army as well, because it is the Army National Guard. And what we try to do is, enable our adjutants general to be successful.
Sir, I can only imagine, but I know that the chief of the National Guard Bureau has a seat at the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he's in on the planning, and they must be talking about all the missions and what do we have to support and what are we going to do. But my imagination brings me back to him coming back from a meeting with the Joint Chiefs and sitting down with you and the director of the Air National Guard and saying, okay, generals, here's what we need to do. Here's how can we source this? What troops are available? How can we put this together?
Yeah, it's that group. It's also the Vice Chief of the National Guard Bureau, Lieutenant General Sasseville. And so there are things that happen that, you know, that come out of nowhere. You know, January 6th, the return of U.S. soldiers out of Afghanistan. Some of these things happen very quickly, and you have to be able to talk about what capability, in my case, what capability does the Army Guard bring to an event like that? And then, you know, move from concept and idea to plan to execution. And so sometimes things move very quickly in this building. It seems like every crisis happens on a Friday afternoon. But it's interesting because, you know, the great thing about being the director is you really get to learn about the other Army National Guard units in other states, right? And so in Minnesota, you're pretty focused on Minnesota. And, you know, some of our neighbors that we have, training relationships with, like Iowa, Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota. But here you really have to know the whole enterprise, and you have to really understand the whole enterprise. And I think while I never planned on being the director, never wanted to be the director, I always just paid attention to what other units were in the Army Guard, what other capabilities were in the Army Guard. So when I came here, while I didn't have a perfect understanding of our capabilities, I had a pretty good understanding of what the Army Guard across the nation could do, and it's an amazing organization.
Sir, just a couple of minutes left, but I couldn't help but think about you after January 6th and through the inauguration, because the National Guard had to provide for some security. And I understand there were some C-130s from Minnesota and some troops from Minnesota came out to visit General Jensen again.
It was great to see Colonel Tad Vanio and that whole team that came over. I mean, obviously, we would have preferred if it was under different circumstances than what it was. And we're just immensely proud of what the entire National Guard did. 26,000 soldiers and airmen ultimately here in Washington, D.C. to ensure that the inauguration would happen uninterrupted and in a safe environment. And so it was a very stressful time, I think, for our whole nation. It was a very stressful time here in Washington, D.C. And then the mission didn't end, you know, after the inauguration. We were out here for several months after that. And very proud of just being a very small part of that. You know, it's, again, what we try to do is enable our adjutants general. And I think that was a great case of what I'm talking about. It was the 53 adjutants general outside of D.C. Supporting the commander of the D.C. Guard in that mission, Air National Guard, Army National Guard. And so, again, not something you'd ever want to do again, but just an amazing story, I think.
General, we're just about out of time. You got any last thoughts for our listeners back in Minnesota from Washington, D.C.?
Well, first of all, Tom, thanks for, you know, coming out here and visiting me and bringing part of the team with you. It's always great to see our Minnesotans out here. And you know, Cindy and I still, we still claim Minnesota as our home. And when this tour's over, we look forward to getting back to Minnesota and being with the kids and our friends that we've made there in Minnesota. So the first year's gone by. I think tomorrow will mark the one-year anniversary of me starting my car and driving out of the driveway heading here to the National Capital Region. So it's gone by incredibly fast, and we've got three more years out here. But we look forward to getting back to Minnesota.
General, I'd like to thank you for spending some time with us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tom.
As Lieutenant General John Jensen and the Director of the Army National Guard from the Pentagon in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In the studio with me today is Doug Wortham, former State Command Sergeant Major, filling in as our co-host. And in a moment, we're going to talk to a Vietnam veteran about his tour of duty. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
In partnership with the Lutheran Social Services, Minnesota Service Corps is a nation-leading program designed to bring essential, community-based services directly to veterans and their families across Minnesota at no cost. Due to its unique structure, this program also provides resources to previously underserved areas in greater Minnesota. Services include individual and family counseling, financial counseling, debt management, addiction counseling, disability service, and in-home counseling. The goal is to help veterans and their families to develop skills and draw on their own strengths to bring about successful and lasting family stability. After serving our country selflessly, veterans and their families can know that we stand behind them and we're ready to serve them. For more information or to request services through CORE, contact your CVSO or County Veteran Service Officer or call 1-888-LINK-VET.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is Keith Rennerfeldt, who was a first lieutenant in A Battery's 7th Battalion of 13th Artillery in Vietnam, who served from October of 1967 to September of 1968. He's a native Minnesota, and he's published a book of his service in 2020, and the book is called Doing My Duty. Keith, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Keith, there are a lot of folks born on this earth since you and I served in Vietnam that probably don't know how that all unfolded, and you were in a lucky position in 1965, so you had to deal with the draft.
Yes, they weren't giving many deferments. I missed one quarter of school, and that was enough for them to tell me I was not pursuing my education in a timely manner.
So that exposed you to the draft, and you went and talked to a recruiter and took some tests, and I understand you were eligible for officer OCS.
Right. That entailed enlisting for one extra year, so I had to do a three-year commitment instead of two, but I thought it would be worth it.
And it actually turns out to be lucky that at OCS you got to be part of the artillery.
Yes, it was. I wasn't sure what branch I would be going to, but the artillery seemed to be well suited for me. I did enjoy being part of the artillery.
And of course, Keith, looking back on Vietnam, most of us that were alive or served in Vietnam knew about the Tet Offensive of 1968, and your service over there, once you got through OCS and so forth, was right in the middle of that, October 67 to September 68.
Right. My worst experience came prior to Tet, and it turns out that on Tet, I was with Charlie Company, 1st to 50th Infantry, in the field, in a field position out in the, on search and destroy missions, and we didn't fire a round during the entire Battle of Tet. We listened to it on our radios, but we were not involved.
Well, I was fortunate because that was tough, especially for those who are up in the way. But let's go back a little bit. When you arrived in Vietnam, a second lieutenant, right out of OCS and artillery school, and you became a forward observer for the 7th Battalion of the 13th Artillery. Can you explain quickly to our listeners, what does that mean? That's kind of a dangerous position.
Well, a lot of people have a misconception as to what we did in Vietnam. Prior wars, you'd be out in front with just your RTO and your radio telephone operator and a recon sergeant. In Vietnam, I spent my 5 months as a forward observer with Charlie Company, 1st of the 50th Infantry. So every time we camped at night, I had an entire company of infantry around me.
And I understand, Keith, you built a close relationship with the captain who was commanding that outfit.
I did. He was an amazing man. And I think the other officers of the 1st to the 50th, I have the utmost respect for. They kept the command and control structure that demanded we treat prisoners of war and villagers with respect. And I think that helped a lot of us when we came home. We didn't have to deal with guilt issues over some of the things that happened over there in some units.
We're speaking with Keith Rennerfeld, who was a first lieutenant with A Battery, the 7th Battalion of 13th Artillery in Vietnam on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Keith, I understand you got in country on October 2nd, and you hooked up with the 7th of the 13th Artillery. And by Halloween, you were out in the thick of it. I understand there was a Halloween battle, and you were up to your neck in trying to defend your troops.
Right. We were ordered to camp at the base of a mountain we had come down 2 days prior, and we really didn't want to do that, but we did, and it turned out that we knew there was heavy activity on that mountain as we came down. It turned out there was an NVA battalion, and on Halloween they planned on overrunning our position at the base of the mountain.
And I understand that one of the things you did the night before was to set up some artillery positions so that if they were coming from those directions, you already knew where you were going to haul in the shells.
Right. Every night when we would camp, I would always plot 2, 3, 4 defensive targets and call those in and actually shoot them in. And bring them a little closer to our perimeter where I wanted them, and then tell the fire direction center to record that last data. I had 3 that night along the base of the mountain, one behind a little knoll, and turned out they were well placed. Captain Randall and I had agreed on where we should put them, and they were very effective.
Well, Keith, I understand when you were inserted, your first duty, you've got the map and the compass, and you had to make sure that you knew where you were. And once you start those defensive targets, you start them a little further away than you really want them, and then walk them in so that you and the artillery back at the base camp are on the same page.
Exactly, exactly. You'd always start them a little further away than you needed. You thought you were, like that night, we thought there'd be some action, so I probably brought those defensive targets a little closer to us than I normally would have.
So, Keith, this is Doug, and I understand that after that night, that battle, you had a special meeting the following day with the general, the commanding general of 1st Cavalry Division. Tell us a little bit about that conversation.
Sure. The next morning, as we were cleaning up, the battle had tapered off near daylight, and early the next morning, General Tolson arrived in a helicopter, and Captain Randall reported to him, and about 5 minutes later, one of the men came running over to me and said, the general wants to speak to you, and I was a little concerned because I had told someone I wasn't going to do something they wanted the previous night. They wanted a shell rep, and that it was just I didn't need a shell report to find out where the mortars and rockets were coming from. I could see the flashes on the mountain. Turned out all he really wanted was to thank me. He said it was the best defensive use of artillery he had seen in the 2 years he had been there.
And what a great compliment that was, and you hadn't even been in country for really that long yet, had you?
Just a little less than 3 weeks.
Yeah, what a great honor, and what an awesome job you did in protecting the men on that mountain.
Well, the men on our northeast perimeter were the real heroes. They ran out of ammunition. I gave all my grenades, ammunition, my weapon to one of the sergeants who took it out to that northeast perimeter.
But your best weapon was your radio, so you could protect the force.
The radio is all I needed. If they got through that perimeter, we were all going to be in pretty tough shape.
Very good, sir. Keith, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about your time in Vietnam and what it was like to come home in the middle of that era. We're speaking with Keith Rennerfeldt on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. I'm here today with Doug Wortham, my co-host, and we've been speaking to Keith Rennerfeldt, who was a lieutenant in the artillery in Vietnam. And he served over there on his tour of duty from October 67 to September 68. And Keith, when the calendar turns from August to early September 1968, and you knew you were coming home, what were your thoughts? Did you think you'd ever make it back?
At that point, I started to believe I'd make it back again because I was working for the Internal Defense Center in Nha Trang, and it was a very quiet area.
And Keith, as you were coming back, I know we had the Pacific Press when I was over there, and we heard about all these protests and everything that was going on. Did you know what to expect when you got back in the United States?
Well, we didn't expect much. We were a little appalled that they were taking out their anger with the war on the veterans. I think almost every vet that came back experienced that in one way or another.
And when you did finally leave Vietnam and head back to the United States, was there a period where you had to do a little cooling down and tell yourself, wait a minute, now I'm back here, I'm a civilian, I'm back home, I'm not in a war zone, people aren't shooting at me anymore? Was it easy to calm down?
Not really. I started the university about 2 weeks after I got back, and had a couple incidents there with protesters, and finally walked out of a history class because the professor was going to lead an anti-Vietnam War march across the bridge, and that triggered a breakdown. I ended up drinking. I didn't draw a sober breath for 2.5 years. It almost killed me.
And Keith, I think there's a lot of Vietnam veterans that went through a similar experience, and it had taught us, at least it taught me, that zero support we got from the public when we were in Vietnam was not a good thing, and as most of the Vietnam veterans say, never again are we going to let our service members or our veterans be treated that way. And I think in the many years that have passed since you got home and since I got back, we've been able to change things and change the way society does treat our service members and veterans and their families.
I've found that a number of Iraq and Afghan veterans had thanked me for what we went through because they are getting treated better.
I don't know about you, Keith, but that sure makes me feel good, and we like to tell these stories on the radio to make sure that all of our listeners out there understand the sacrifices not only of our service members when they're out serving, but their families who sacrifice as well while they're deployed.
Absolutely. That's why this latest withdrawal from Afghanistan, staying there was not going to be as easy as a lot of people think. Some of those current warriors have spent half of their child's life deployed, and it's just not fair.
So, Keith, as a Iraq veteran, Desert Storm, Desert Shield veteran, and we do appreciate what the Vietnam veterans have done for us to provide that support for when we came home. Your book, Doing My Duty, Is that something that you did, that you wrote as kind of a therapy for yourself, or something that you wanted to do to help others to start tell their stories as well?
It actually ended up being both. It was very therapeutic. Of course, that process started when I went to my first reunion in 2012. Then one of our members wrote a book. I read that, and I wrote down the preliminary story of Halloween, and then he started encouraging me to write down all my stories. And after he had reviewed some of those, he wanted me to put it into a book format. And so did a high school friend who had written a short story of his deployment. And all three of our stories are different, but they have some similar threads.
Keith, we've been on the air with Minnesota Military Radio for 11 years now, and we've only had on a handful of Vietnam veterans. Most of my Vietnam veteran buddies and people I've met are just not willing to talk yet. It seems to me you're on a new mission now that you've published your book. You're trying to get some of our guys to speak up before it's too late.
Yeah, absolutely. And the first step of that, I think, is talking to other combat veterans. If you talk to other combat veterans, you're going to see how much similarity you have, and that other people are sharing all the same trauma that you had. And it's helpful. It kind of purges things a bit. You become more willing to talk about it and even start writing.
Well, it's a great mission for you now, and the book is called Doing My Duty by Keith Rennerfelt. And is that available at all online book sales outlets, sir?
It's available online. The paperbacks, I didn't intend this for a whole lot of resales to give to family and friends, but I've given away almost 200 copies, and people have had, I've gotten some good feedback on it.
Well, Keith, congratulations on writing that book and getting that out for us, and thank you for your service in Vietnam, and we really appreciate you joining us today, and I hope our listeners go out and get that book, Doing My Duty by Keith Rennerfelt. Thanks for joining us today, Keith.
Thank you very much.
That was Keith Rennerfelt, a veteran of the war in Vietnam, and his book, once again, is Doing My Duty. You can find that online at any of our bookstores. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Doug Bly. Doug, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Warning, we got the retired State Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham in the studio, and he's making a Sergeant Major face at me right now. So watch out, Doug.
CSM Wortham and I got along really well, Tom, in spite of whatever you might think.
Very good, very good.
Well, it's great to have you on the show again. Doug, it's always good to have you on the show and hear how things are going with the Patriot Guard.
Thank you, Doug. Good to talk to you.
So, Mr. Bly, we just ran out of September. Three-quarters of the year is gone. How are your writers doing this year?
You know, it's been a crazy year, Tom. In fact, I just pulled up our calendar, and we already have 12 missions on the book for October. You know, finishing through yesterday, but, you know, it's just, there's no end to it, but there's some fun ones in there. We're starting to do the VA home visits again, so I know we've got our Silver Bay visit and the bingo set up for October 16th for any of our friends in northern Minnesota who may be interested in joining along, but those are the ones where, you know, and I've said this before and we'll continue to say on the show, these are our forgotten veterans. They're in these homes. Many don't have family to visit them. And when we show up once a month, it's a big deal to them. And our members up there, I mean, they love it. They love going in. They love playing bingo. They love spending time with them, having cake with them. And I think it's really, but it's also good for these veterans as well to know that someone still remembers them. You know, we always say we never forget. But let's remember them while they're alive, too. So those are some of the fun visits we get to do.
So, Doug, those are some of your missions, along with going to the funerals and then, of course, being there when we deploy troops overseas, and your favorite mission, being there when they come home.
Well, I certainly, Tom. And, you know, it's we might think the wars are over, but, you know, I know they're not. You know they're not, and I know that Doug knows they're not. You know, I don't know how many Minnesotans really know that the Minnesota National Guard was present at the Karzai Airport in Afghanistan during that mass exodus. And, you know, so we have not forgotten. You know, that we are still active. We still have people in harm's way. And we're there to help send them off. And we're there to welcome them home. And those are the important ones for us.
So, Doug, again, you know, we really appreciate you, the work that the Patriot Guard does. And obviously when I served, we just loved having you all there on your bikes or, you know, with the flags. Are you looking for people to join the team? How are you sitting with your numbers, and what can we do to better support you?
You know, that's an outstanding question. We're, like many other military support and veteran support organizations, we're seeing reduction in the numbers of people who are active and interested. And so we're always looking for people, and we're also looking for new leaders. I mean, we need a new generation of leadership to show up and be part of what we're doing as well. So we welcome all interested patriots in Minnesota, and we don't care if you ride a motorcycle or not. We don't care if you're a veteran or civilian. We just care if you're a patriot and you have a 3x5 flag and you're willing to come spend anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour with us.
And Doug, how do they find you? How do you become a rider?
Best way is you go to our website, www.mnpatriotguard.org, all one word. On the left-hand side, you click join us and have an email address and a zip code, and we push information to you once a week, and we let you know what's going on. And when you come to your first mission, make sure you walk up to the right captain and introduce yourself, and he'll make sure you get a partner for the day to help guide you along.
Very good, sir. Thank you for joining us again today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you all, and God bless America.
That was Doug Bly from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Lieutenant General John Jensen, Keith Rennerfeldt, Doug Bly from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about the Minneapolis VA and a new Yellow Ribbon Company here in Minnesota. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.